Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to middle of the goddamn night episode of Sour Graps. Good morning. It is now 2:40 a.m. Central Time. My 3-year-old daughter is not handling quarantine very well. She doesn't, you know, she wants to get out and do 3-year-old things. So she just decided to destroy our house. Not maliciously, just because she's got a lot of pent-up energy. So that's tiring. So, yeah, I was up yesterday morning at, like, 6. Because she was raring to go. And last night, the routine is my wife takes her upstairs and, you know, gets her to calm down enough that she falls asleep. And when I get the sign that she's asleep and I won't be needed to, like, come upstairs and lay down the law or read another bedtime story or whatever it is to get her to go to sleep, then, after I get the sign, the signal from upstairs, then I'm free to start the podcast. That's how our lives work. So while waiting for the sign, I passed out on the couch because I was tired. And then I woke up at 1 something in the morning and debated whether or not I should even do this, because none of this shit matters. Because a character that you killed and you had a zombie biker cowboy kill a man and bury him in the ground, and that dude showed up a few weeks later and said none of this shit matters. So why even do a podcast about it? And then I realized, because I love the Fightful Faithful, and you are owed me talking shit about this shit that doesn't matter. By their own admission, they admitted it doesn't matter. So that's fun to talk about. I'll try and up the energy, but as I said, it is technically but 0:00 in the morning. So let's get started. By the way, I'm your host, Alex Pulaski, and everything sucks, especially tonight. We started out with the VIP lounge with MVP hosting it, and he talks about how last time we did this with the men's Money in the Bank people, it didn't end up so well. Let's hope that there's not a big brawl. He didn't say this part, but he could have. Let's hope there's not a big brawl, which leads to a 6-man tag, which leads to one of the Money in the Bank participants pinning a champion, which then leads to that champion accepting a title match for later in the night, which leads to the Money in the Bank competitor blowing out his knee in kayfabe, and us having to replace that Money in the Bank competitor with somebody else. So we do a gauntlet match that is scripted by the book, the only way they ever do gauntlet matches. And during that gauntlet match, somebody comes back from the dead and tells us that none of this shit matters. He could have said that, but he just said it ended in a brawl. So, which is true. It ended in a brawl, except for it didn't end in a brawl. It ended in all the other shit I just said. But anyway, he says, here's the Women's Money in the Bank participants. And Asuka comes out and Shayna comes out and Nia comes out and Nia knocks over the velvet ropes because Nia is a big bowl in a china shop. And she doesn't know what to do. She's so large, she doesn't obey all the rules of things because she's so large and she gets to do whatever she wants because she's Nia Jax. She's very large. It's all fucking insulting. Asuka is a delight. They asked Nia Jax about something, and she says, well, whatever. Do I possess the skill set to win this match? But that's what he asked. Like, MVP says, you possess the skill set to win this match, to climb to the top of the ladder and do the thing. And she says, skill set? Have you not been watching? I'm the most dominant force on Raw. And I want MVP to say, that ain't what I asked. I know you can throw women all over the place. You're very strong. And as we've mentioned, very large. What I asked you was, can you climb seven flights of stairs? Now, that might seem like a fat joke, and it is, coming from a fat person. But also, realistically, you just had double knee surgery. Like, I believe what I've read is, unless I'm mistaken, Nia Jax is not in possession of ACL. Like, she has zero ACLs. You're supposed to have two. She has zero. So I would think, like, climbing a bunch of flights of stairs would suck. Then, after that, you got to climb a ladder. And those ladders, by the end of the ladder match, they're always rickety as hell. So giant Nia Jax climbing seven flights of stairs and then climbing a ladder to get a briefcase, that's not the same skill set as chucking women all over the damn joint. We know you can do the second part. There's another part of the match that we're not sure of because we've never seen that before. I mean, if everybody else gets the whole I'm unable to climb ladders disease during a ladder match, how is that going to befall Nia Jax? I guess she's going to get a critical case of unable to climb a ladder disease. Asuka, they asked Asuka about something, and what do you have to say about her being so dominant? And Asuka says, something, something, something Japanese, something, something, something Japanese, something, something big booty in English, something, something, something Japanese. Really great, really funny. And especially the camera lingering on Nia Jax, who just keeps mouthing, that's offensive. That is offensive. It's great. Then they ask Shayna Baszler, what do you have to say for yourself, Shayna Baszler? She says, because apparently this is the thing. She knows Latin, ancient Latin. She says, opera non verba, which apparently means like actions, not words. They force her to explain what that means. So she says, Asuka, you're all talk. You're talk. I just come in and I choke people out. I guess what she's saying is that if I put everybody to sleep, then I can climb the ladder on my own, whatever I want. I want Shayna Baszler. I don't know who, because that's going to be a hell of a burial in Vince's eyes, but it would be a really cool moment. Is for her to just snap and choke out one of the men. Otis. I wanted to choke out Otis. I think that'd be hilarious. Because, as you know, The men's and women's matches are happening at the same time. It's pandemonium. Pandemicmonium. So anyway, so she and Baszler and Asuka are standing there yelling at each other. Asuka's yelling at Baszler in Japanese, and Baszler's just standing there going, doing the "you talk too much" sign with her hand. And then they look over, and Asuka, again, this is weird. Asuka has been sitting on her own couch. Shayna Baszler has been sitting on her own couch. Nia has been sitting on this little rickety chair. Like, it's one of those, like, weird, like, design chairs that has more, like, form than function. And she's been sitting on it this whole time in the middle. And so Asuka and Shayna notice this and look over at Nia and then kick her. And she falls back into her chair, breaks her chair because she's very large. And then she rolls out of the ring. Like, there's a 35% chance that it's just going to be fat jokes about Nia for the rest of the time until she her contract runs out. Like, at some point, like, I mean, just really all of it is like, she's big, and she is. And that can be an asset if you treat it as such. Or it can be, ha ha, big fat lady sat in a chair weird and the chair broke, ha ha. It could be either of those. Asset or big ol' ass. Et. Depends on how you want to write your material, Vincent. Hey, there's a Last Chance Scotland match because Apollo Crews got hurt. Because we said he had to, after we built his momentum for weeks and made him look like an awesome dude when he slapped Andrade in the face. That was really cool. Then we destroyed all that momentum so we could get AJ Styles in the match. But I'm spoiling it. Match starts out with Bobby Lashley versus, again, this is the thing they keep saying. We don't know how many people are in this match. Shouldn't you, as the announcers, shouldn't you have like a line backstage? She's like, hey, how many people are in this match? And they're like, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hey, just heads up. We're about to come back for commercial. How many people are in this match? 8. 8? Thanks. That's your job! As a commentator, Tom Phillips, talk to somebody. How many people are in the gauntlet match? And they say 8. The answer isn't, we don't know. It's just whoever decides to wander over to Gorilla from catering and say, hey, can I get in? I'd like to get in. And if you can do that, which apparently you can because Akira Tozawa and Titus O'Neil are in this fucking match. If you can just do that, then why didn't everybody do it? Why isn't Andrade in this match? Why isn't everybody in this match? If you could just wander down from catering and get in because they got all the spots open, whatever, we'll just keep doing this forever. Whatever, we'll just keep doing this forever is the motto of Raw. That should be like the tagline. Monday Night Raw, whatever, we'll just keep doing this forever. Yeah. Bobby Lashley versus Titus O'Neil. They mention again Bobby Lashley's out there without Lana because she doesn't want to be distracted because of how beautiful she is. Right. Bobby Lashley, Titus O'Neil, I think it's the longest he's wrestled in a match in feels like 2 years. It was like 48 seconds and he got hit with a spear, but he looked decent at times. Like, he was not being manhandled by Bobby Lashley until it was time for him to be manhandled by Bobby Lashley. Akira Tozawa, again, Titus O'Neil and Akira Tozawa being in this match doesn't make any fucking sense. Considering Akira Tozawa has just been, he's just, he's there to be on NXT and be a contender for the Cruiserweight Championship while also being on Raw and losing every week to whoever you want to put in the ring with him because he's tiny. He's also there to inspire Jerry Lawler to be racist. But yeah, it doesn't make, why are Titus O'Neil and Akira Tozawa a hair's breadth away from being in the Money in the Bank ladder match, which determines if you can get a guaranteed title shot? Shouldn't you need to win a few matches, or in Titus O'Neil's case, have a few matches before you can get into the big match to determine a title to contender? My brain hurts. And again, he just spears Takira Tozawa, who runs off the ropes directly into a spear because that's his job. Speaking of job, Shelton Benjamin does the job versus Bobby Lashley. That's it. So Lashley looks incredibly impossible to beat after three competitors. Three competitors, let's be honest, who probably shouldn't have been in this match to begin with. But his job, Bobby Lashley's job in this storytelling, is to look unbeatable until he beats himself, because then he faces Humberto Carrillo. And Humberto Carrillo, again, I don't know if he should be in this match to begin with. I don't remember. Has he won matches recently? Has he had matches recently? Whatever. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. As we'll see in a second, none of this fucking shit matters. Bobby Lashley gets pissed off at Humberto Carrillo for, I guess, not dying immediately like the other three opponents did. But Lashley was stomping Humberto Carrillo in the corner and wouldn't stop when the referee tried to pull him off, because I guess that's a thing that you can't do. And so Lashley shoved the referee. I mean, not really. He just pushed him away. He didn't shove him onto the ground or anything. Just shoved him. And the referee's like, hey, you can't shove me. You can't shove me. Don't you shove me. Okay, that's fine. You're disqualified. What I feel like is it was supposed to happen was that, like, it feels like it was supposed to be, hey, Bobby Lashley, you can't shove me. And then Bobby Lashley shoves him again. And then the ref says, okay, I'm calling for the bell. Because what it looks like is the ref going like, hey, don't you do that. You know what? Screw it. I'm doing it right now. It makes the ref look kind of like a power-hungry jerk. Like the umpires. Remember baseball? That was a thing. Milwaukee Brewers were probably going to lose a lot of games this year anyway. RIP so far, the baseball season. But anyway, umpires who like make the whole thing about themselves and start tossing guys just because, you know, it's fun for them. That's what this ref looks like. Anyway, Lashley's so pissed about being so stupid that he shoved the ref to get himself disqualified that he tries to murder Humberto Carrillo. And so Humberto Carrillo's job in this match is to be the babyface who gets beat up and then has to fight from underneath because he's already been injured, somehow scoring pinfall victories over fresh men in this gauntlet match until the big bad comes out at the last person in the gauntlet match and that person wins. It's the same fucking formula they do in every gauntlet match, And it's gotten to a point where when they do a gauntlet match, it's a waste of an hour of programming because it's the same fucking shit. And you know, they're only doing it to waste an hour of programming and they don't have any other options. Like they don't have any other, like it, a gauntlet match is booked by you. It's a fake thing. This whole thing is fake. And also it doesn't matter, but it's booked by you. You decide it. So not in kayfabe. If this was a real sport, how would you determine who are the entrants to begin with? And who and which entrant comes in where in the succession? Now, are the top eight people, the top eight contenders who are not yet in the Money in the Bank ladder match, are they chosen by win-loss percentage? No, because Titus O'Neil and Akira Tozawa wouldn't be in the match. So let's just set that aside. Once you've determined who's going to be in the match, how do you decide who goes in first? I know you write it. That's the answer. But if you weren't writing it, if you weren't in control of all of this shit, how would you tell it to somebody if you were trying to convince them that you weren't a puppet master behind the scenes? Were all the names drawn out of a hat? You know, like, okay, the first person in the gauntlet match is Bobby Lashley, and the second person is Titus O'Neil. And rummaging around in the hat. And the third person is Akira Tozawa. Sorry, Akira. And the fourth person is Shelton Benjamin. Is that how you do it? If that's how you do it, just say it. Otherwise, we're left to assume correctly that you decide that Big Bad Heel runs through three, doesn't matter who. Fourth person, the fifth person to come in the match is, oh, look at that. It's a babyface who makes the first big bad heel angry, and that first big bad heel beats him up too much. So the sixth person who comes in, also a heel, how did that happen? Decides he's going to take liberties with this poor babyface who's been beat up too much, and whoops, the babyface turns the tables on that heel. Oh, good Lord, that's crazy. Can he do it again? Because guess what? The seventh person in the match is also a heel. Maybe even a friend of the sixth person who was also a heel. And then we're going to run that exact same playbook we did with the previous part of the gauntlet match where the babyface fights from underneath and reverses something into a pinfall, shockingly. And then, oh no, the person who comes in last in the gauntlet match definitely wins it. If you ever did a formula other than that, it might not be so maddeningly obvious. But Carrillo gets beat up by Lashley. Again, this would be a perfect opportunity for them to not hurt Humberto Carrillo or whoever is in this spot because he has a built-in excuse that Bobby Lashley flew off his nut and destroyed him after he was disqualified. Angel Garza can then come in, pick the bones, and get a quick victory. But they don't do that. Angel Garza takes liberties with his cousin, Humberto Carrillo, and then he gets the wing clipper reversed, again, rather cleverly by Humberto Carrillo into a sunset flip pinning combination, and he loses. And then Austin Theory comes down, and he's extra pissed because Angel Garza, just lost and was humiliated. So he takes liberties with Humberto Carrillo until he does a superplex off the top rope And then Humberto Carrillo reverses it into a pinning combination, and everyone's shocked. But not as shocked as they are when AJ Styles shows up from beyond the grave. And AJ Styles, he shows up and they go right to commercial. And then they come back and it's like in the middle of the goddamn match. It's taped. It's a weird thing. So, isn't it taped? I thought it was taped. Don't they tape it earlier in the night and then they broadcast it live later? I don't remember. What did Vince settle on? Being a giant colossal douche or a slightly less of a giant colossal douche? I'm not really sure. Anyway, AJ Styles beats Humberto Carrillo. I mean, Humberto gets his licks in a few times, but AJ Styles wins, and obviously he does. And then he gets on the goddamn mic, and he says, "I'm not a zombie. I'm not a ghost. I'm the phenomenal AJ Styles." And he proceeds to just retcon all of that shit with The Undertaker. It's like, yeah, I got buried, so what? Yeah, I got buried, so what? Should be a shirt that everybody who just got released from WWE puts out on ProWrestlingTees.com. EC3's new shirts to say, yeah, I got buried, so what? Heath Slater, yeah, I got buried, so what? The Revival, yeah, I got buried, so what? All of them should have their own t-shirts that say, yeah, I got buried, so what? Then he says, it doesn't matter. I didn't lose. There's no rules in a boneyard match. So I didn't lose. So not only were you not actually buried because you got out, but now you're trying to say that the match itself didn't end when we saw it end. You fought The Undertaker in a graveyard, and at the end he put you in a grave and dumped dirt all over you. You say you didn't lose. Okay. Also, in canon, your two best friends, Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson, died in that match. It's true. We'll never see them again. Shouldn't you at least mention it? That, yeah, I got buried, so what? Yeah, Luke and Carl are dead now. But that doesn't matter. None of this matters. I'm going to win the Money in the Bank ladder match. Now, AJ's a little rusty, so he did his stupid promo about how unique the Money in the Bank ladder match is. He says, "I'm in the most unique Money in the Bank ladder match." I believe the end of your phrase there is "of all time" or "in history" or whatever, but you just said, "I'm in the most unique Money in the Bank ladder match." And the tagline, AJ, is, "And the risk is worth the reward." I know that's the tagline because they're using it all over the fucking place. And what you said was not, "I am in the most unique Money in the Bank ladder match of all time, and the risk is worth the reward." But what you said, AJ, was, "I am in the most unique Money in the Bank ladder match, and it's worth it. It's worth it." Then he says he's going to throw Aleister Black or Rey Mysterio off the roof. Later on, Aleister Black says, "Bring it on." He also says, "Tell me what it was like to be dead," because Aleister Black's greatest fantasy is to be dead. I guess he never got the memo, Aleister. None of this shit matters. AJ Styles wasn't actually buried. It was fine. or yeah, he was buried, but so what? None of this shit matters. But Rey Mysterio does a promo where he's very concerned about being thrown off the top of does everybody think that the top of Titan Towers or whatever it's called, the top of WWE headquarters is like a postage stamp? It's a huge fucking office building. I believe that roof is thousands of square feet. You could wrestle up there for a day and a half and never come within 50 feet of the edge. Speaking of edge, he and Orton are going to be on Raw next week, so that'll be fun. Fun. So here's what's really funny. On Hulu, which is how I watch the show, on the Hulu app, there's a description of every episode of Monday Night Raw, and they tell you what's going to be on it. So this one says, WWE Champion Drew McIntyre in action, ! Plus Seth Rollins, period. Asuka confronts Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, ! I just thought it was funny that Seth Rollins was a period in there. So it should actually read, if you're reading it out loud, WWE Champion Drew McIntyre in action, plus Seth Rollins. Asuka confronts Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. It's somehow more funny that the plus Seth Rollins is in the middle. Like if it had been Drew McIntyre, Asuka, plus Seth Rollins, I don't think it would have been as funny to me. But plus Seth Rollins is how I'm going to refer to him all the time now because he's so fucking boring. He has a match an interview with Charlie Caruso in the middle of the ring. You don't need to do it in the ring, guys. There's nobody there to watch. So they ask him because Buddy Murphy is facing Drew McIntyre in the main event, which could be, if they decided to let them actually do it, one of the best matches in the history of Raw. That's how good Buddy Murphy and Drew McIntyre can be. Instead, it's like 6 minutes and it's over really quick, and Buddy never had a chance. But anyway, he says, your disciple Murphy is facing Drew McIntyre later tonight. How do you feel about that? And Seth says to Charlie Caruso, he says, listen, Charlie, whatever will be. And I think it's hilarious that that he's using the que sera sera philosophy of life. If you don't know, I'm old. I'm not this old. There was a song back in the early 60s. And I don't remember who sang it, some lady, called Que Sera Sera, which means, in Spanish, whatever will be, will be. And the lyrics of this song are, when I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. It was also made famous again by an episode of The Simpsons where Ned Flanders sings it while waiting to be hit by a meteorite. The Simpsons, man. That was a golden age. Ned Flanders waiting to be hit by a meteorite because everybody else in all of Springfield piled into his meteor shelter that he built. And Ned Flanders, being the ultimate nice guy, says, well, there's not enough room for all of us. One of us is going to have to leave. I guess it'll be me. And then he goes out and stands on the top of a hill waiting to be crushed by a meteor and sings, Que sera, sera. It's also funny because Seth Rollins, I'm pretty sure, is wearing a lady's jacket. So I just love the idea of him singing the part where he goes, when I was just a little girl, I bought this jacket and now it fits me. Mia says some bullshit about how he doesn't really want to be champion and Drew wants it too much and whatever. Speaking of wanting things too much or wanting things not too much. MVP has decided to manage Shane Thorne and Brendan Vank in their rematch versus Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. But MVP doesn't come down to the ring with them because why would you do that as a manager? That's not how managers work in wrestling. But he pumps them up with some backstage speech or whatever. Brendan Vink, I guess his new thing is he's all 6'5" of Brendan Vink. As though 6'5" is supposed to be an impressive height for somebody in WWE. But they beat Ricochet and Cedric Alexander clean. Clean. There's no shenanigans. MVP's not down there distracting the ref. As far as I could recall, that's a clean tag team victory for Shane Thorne and Brendan Vank. Vank even gets the finish. He hits a big boot. It's a nice looking big boot on Ricochet, who sells it like $1 million. And he pins Ricochet. So Ricochet went from challenging for the WWE Championship versus Brock Lesnar in Saudi Arabia at the end of February to on the first Raw in May getting pinned clean in a tag match by Brendan Vank. Yeah. I got buried. So what? Vincent, or if you want to say Paul gets credit for this, great. Give credit to Paul Heyman for this one. That's fine. The good things he gets credit for, the bad things he gets credit for too. Whoever made this decision is fucking stupid. Pay no attention to the high-flying, fun-to-watch black guys. They're not special. Is not how you build a cool new tag team in the division. That's not how you do that. Shane Thorne and Brendan Vank, Elliot Sexton, could not be more of a white bread bullshit tag team. Okay, they're Australian, so it's white bread with Vegemite on it. They're just two dudes. Cedric Alexander, former long-time reigning cruiserweight champion, great competitor. Ricochet, one of the best, objectively, one of the best wrestlers in the world. Those two guys together, don't lose to Shane Thorne and Brendan Vank. They don't. They can't. Or you're telling us that none of this shit matters. Great. Good. I'll never, ever watch a new tag team that you're put together and you give them a few fun victories. I'll never, ever think they're actually, in your words, building momentum, because it could all be squashed by a stupid fucking decision like this to have them lose clean and 50-50 them against Shane Thorne and Brendan Mother Vanking Vank. We'll talk more about how to destroy somebody's momentum later, very soon. Next, let's talk about this. I thought this was a title match. I don't know why I thought that. I don't know why the Viking Raiders would challenge the Street Profits to a match if it wasn't for the titles. But whatever. Where's Bianca Belair? She was the best part of this whole Street Profits and Viking Raiders shtick. Until now, I guess she's wrestling the main event. Main event is where you've stashed one of the most interesting, charismatic characters that have ever... I don't even know, man. Fucking whatever. Just like, even if she's not going to wrestle on Raw, there's no reason for her not to be in the corner of... Whatever. It's just fucking stupid. Oh my gosh. In parentheses, insert tag team here. Just pin the tag team champions. What does this mean moving forward? Is like, it's like on a menu that you just push and insert into the script. They haven't used this one since going all the way back to fucking Friday when this Forgotten Strons pinned New Day. It's the same exact script. Now, this match, the match itself, Street Profits versus Viking Raiders, Street Profits having never beaten the Viking Raiders. This might be the best empty arena, like non-WrestleMania, I guess, Raw or SmackDown match that they've done in an empty arena. It was a great, great tag match. And it should have been for the belts. Street Profits, like if you actually were a company that really cared about telling long-term stories, then you could do Street Profits cannot seem to beat the Viking Raiders. No matter what. They had a great match versus them in this one. It was a really good match. They hit their finisher and everything. And the Viking Raiders were just too much. Viking Raiders are a great team. Street Profits are still relatively young. They're going to get better. I like the storyline of Street Profits can't quite beat the Viking Raiders. That's their Achilles heel. They can beat everybody else. Then, over the course of weeks, months, maybe even years, you build up the Viking Raiders, the Street Profits, to the point where they do beat the Viking Raiders. And then it's a major, major moment. Fine. But this is a non-title match. What does this mean moving forward? You've got to think maybe the Viking Raiders just earned themselves a title shot by beating the tag champs clean in a non-title match. Yeah, I think that there's no other way anyone ever earns a title shot in the tag division. Everyone, it always works out that you pin the tag champs in a non-title match and then you get a title match. And usually you lose that title match because that's the way Vince thinks tag teams should work. Again, this was a very, very good match. And I actually really liked the finish with Eric sliding in with a vicious knee to break up a pinfall. And then they just chuck Montez Ford out of the ring and hit the Viking Experience. God, I hate that name. On Dawkins for the win. I think it was really, really good. It was really good. And it doesn't matter because they'll have a tag title match that somehow the Viking Raiders will lose, or they'll win, but it won't. Why did you just have this be the thing? Like, there's a really easy way of like having the Viking Raiders being like, we want the smoke from you, Street Profits, because we know you can't beat us. And have one of the two, probably Montez, be like or even have Bianca Belair accept on their behalf. But not only, yes, sure, you can have us, and it's going to be for the titles, because we are going to beat you, because we are better than you. And then have them be too big for their britches, and they lose that tag title match, and then have them chase. Because I think I like them as tag champs. I think they're better chasing. So we'll see. But this whole whatever tag team you decide to use has just pinned the tag champs. What does this mean moving forward? You've got to think maybe this builds momentum. Maybe they'll get a title shot out of this. That has to end, my God. You just do it so much. Too much. Charlotte Flair is the NXT champion, so of course she's on Raw. She says she's been pulling double duty since she won the NXT title, and that's true. And I don't know. Do they think that she moves ratings that much that she's on both shows? I don't know. But she talks about how she's going to beat Io Shirai on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. And she was interrupted by Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan, who just came off of two straight defeats of her old, not old nemesis, but her former friend, Ruby Riott, who then decided to, like, pick a fight with Liv Morgan when Ruby Riott came back. And Ruby Riott lost in impressive fashion, I guess. I mean, she lost in, like, 3 minutes twice in two successive weeks to Liv Morgan. So they are building Liv Morgan for something. It turns out what they might have been building her for is to feed her to Charlotte Flair. This was a good match by Liv Morgan. She got in a lot of good shots from Charlotte, against Charlotte. She sold the hell out of the beating that she took from Charlotte, but she never gave up until she did. That's the way it works. Charlotte's very good at making people look great right up until she says, nope. And that's the mark of a champion. You know? Charlotte, I don't know. I mean, like, the perception that Charlotte is, Charlotte wins, LOL, is not reality, because she's lost several times in the past couple of years. And I don't know the last match she lost, like lost, like clean, like tapped out or was pinned to anybody besides one of the other four horsewomen, the other three horsewomen. Sasha, Becky certainly seems to have her number recently. Bayley pinned her for the title when Bayley won it on Money in the Bank. I don't know. Like, I don't remember the last time Charlotte has ever lost to anybody who's not one of the other three women who have been billed at her level. Like, it would be a really amazing thing for her to actually lose to somebody like Rhea Ripley or Bianca Belair or Io Shirai or, hell, Liv Morgan. Somebody said on Twitter that imagine if Liv had won this match. Well, that means that there's no way Charlotte could possibly lose the match on Wednesday versus Io Shirai. Well, then, so we got to pick one. If Liv loses or Io loses. And either way, somebody's going to say somebody's getting buried. Liv's being buried. Or NXT and Io Shirai's being buried. One or the other. Well, what's, like, you got to pick one. Imagine thinking those are the only two options. A, you could not book this fucking match in the first place because Liv Morgan's on a hot streak. And what better way to kill that than by having her come out and pick a fight with Charlotte Flair only to lose? Unless you're actually doing long-term storytelling where eventually Liv Morgan does beat Charlotte Flair for a title. Do I trust you to do long-term storytelling? No, I do not, because you don't fucking do it. So if you're actually playing this whole thing out, where the arc of Liv Morgan is, she loses badly to Charlotte Flair, goes away for several months, reinvents herself, comes back, challenges Charlotte Flair again. Turns out she's much better now, but still not good enough. So she improves and improves and improves. And finally, in a big, 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 big moment for Liv Morgan, she beats Charlotte Flair and becomes a champion. If that's your storyline you're telling over the course of what, a year and a half? Great. If instead, which is more likely, you sacrifice Ruby Riott, one of the best women's wrestlers in the whole fucking world, to Liv Morgan's momentum by having Ruby Riott get effectively squashed by losing to one move, the same move, 2 weeks in a row in the course of a total of, I believe, 6.5 minutes. That's what you do to Ruby Riott to build Liv Morgan's momentum so Liv Morgan can squander all of that momentum by challenging Charlotte Flair to a match and then losing. To prove what? Charlotte Flair is a badass and really, really good at wrestling and really hard to beat? We already knew that. Didn't need to happen. Didn't need to happen. Or, because this is a non-title match and you love to do this anyway, and it's a good way to build something from Raw to NXT. You have this match go the way it does. You have Charlotte in control and just toying with Liv until Io Shirai comes out and starts jabbering at Charlotte Flair. And then you have Liv Morgan hit a schoolgirl roll up on Charlotte and get the 1-2-3. That's a huge thing for Liv. In her mind, she beat Charlotte Flair. We all know it was a distraction win, but that's fine. You always do that anyway. But for Liv, I could see it being a really important part of her career that she finally, she says, I beat Charlotte Flair. She'll always have that. She can always say, I beat Charlotte Flair. That'll be a major deal. Charlotte, on the other hand, just gets pinned by this roll-up by Liv Morgan, flies off the handle, and starts beating the hell out of Liv Morgan, right? Liv Morgan, though, because she's Liv Morgan and a little off, is laughing through the whole thing. I beat you, Charlotte! I beat you, Queenie! Because all of her little thing when she challenges Charlotte to a match, all that promo work was all really great by Liv Morgan. Her irreverence in the face of Queen Charlotte, I thought was excellent. So her getting beaten up, a la Brad Pitt by Lou in Fight Club, just cackling in the face of Charlotte Flair as she beats on her. I beat you, Queenie. I beat you. Ow, ow. I beat you. It doesn't matter. I beat you. And Charlotte losing it. And then that's why she's distracted long enough for Io to come down to the ring, get up onto the top turnbuckle, and hit a moonsault onto Charlotte. A beautiful, wonderful moonsault. That makes everybody go, wow, who is this Io Shirai person? I better tune in 2 days to watch her face Charlotte Flair. Wouldn't that be better than just having Liv Morgan squander all of that momentum? Like, if you actually saw Liv Morgan get a schoolgirl roll up on Charlotte and beat her, and then Charlotte lose it and start beating on Liv, but Liv is like laughing through the whole thing. She's in pain, but she's laughing because she beat Charlotte. Wouldn't that make you more interested in who Liv Morgan is? It would for me. And if Io Shirai came down to the ring and interrupted that beatdown by hitting a beautiful moonsault on Charlotte, wouldn't you be more excited for the Charlotte versus Io Shirai match in 2 days? I know I would. But they're not interested in doing any of that shit. They're interested in keeping the status quo the way it is. Charlotte is big and powerful and genetically superior, and nobody can beat her. Is the status quo. Anything that throws a monkey wrench into that, not welcome here. We're not doing that. So you don't progress anybody. You build Liv Morgan for weeks by having her beat Ruby Riott twice in 2 weeks. Ending that feud, you have her in a really great position to move forward into something, and the thing you have her move forward into is a loss to Charlotte. We'll see. Somebody tells me on Twitter, have faith and see how it all plays out. Bruh, have you met me? Have we met? Do you know what I do here? Yeah, no. I'm not, no. I'll never see how anything plays out again. Because I know how it plays out. Because you guys only ever let it play out one way. Speaking of which, super powerful babyface champion facing now newly chicken shit heel challenger at the pay-per-view. Chicken shit heel challenger's minion faces babyface monster champion a week before the pay-per-view. Gosh, I wonder how this is going to turn out. Buddy Murphy's an amazing wrestler. He's so good. And I want very badly to see him and Drew McIntyre have a 15 to 18 minute match where they just tear the crap out of each other, and Buddy Murphy proves that he's as good as I know he is. This is what we got. We got like 5 minutes, and then Drew McIntyre laid him out with a claymore. And then Seth, like, he begged Seth to get in the ring so he would fight him. Come on, get in the ring and fight me, Seth. Fight me. I'm begging you, get in the ring and fight me, Seth. And Seth wouldn't do it until Drew had his back turned. And then he got in and hit a stomp. And he was going to go for another one, but Drew McIntyre got up and got him by the goozle. Right underneath the neck there, and then hit him with a headbutt, and was gonna hit him with a claymore, but Seth rolled away. The least consequential part of the entire fucking show was this match, which is really upsetting, because Buddy Murphy versus Drew McIntyre could be so fucking great. I hope they let it be one day. There was an interesting backstage thing that they interviewed Buddy Murphy about Seth facing Drew at Money in the Bank and him facing Drew that night. I mean, they interviewed him, you know, hours before their actual match. And he says, Seth Rollins is great. I hope we've talked about it. And I hope one day that I can be as good as Seth Rollins or better. And there'll come a day when Seth Rollins and I'll have to put that to a test and have a match with Seth Rollins. But that's not now. And Seth thinks he can beat Drew McIntyre. And I think he can too. But I know I can. That's the whole thing, is that I have no doubt that Buddy Murphy can beat Aleister Black. We just never saw him do it. They ended that feud before he could get that opportunity. On any given Sunday, as they say. And yeah, I believe Buddy Murphy can beat Drew McIntyre. I believe Buddy Murphy can beat Brock Lesnar. Buddy Murphy's fucking phenomenal. We'll see if they ever let him be. So that was it. AJ Styles came back from the dead, and it doesn't matter. Like, he told us nothing matters. We saw that nothing matters because, I mean, at WrestleMania, you get buried, literally, by The Undertaker. And then you come back like nothing happened. You come back like your two friends weren't murdered by The Undertaker in a cemetery. And you tell us That was then. This is now. Nothing matters. Yeah. I got buried. So what? When you come right out and say it? Jesus, dudes. Like, you're not even pretending anymore. That was Raw. This has been Sour Graps. I have been Alex Pawlowski. It is now 3:40 a.m. Central Time. I have to be up in like 4 hours and take care of a crazy toddler all day. Everything sucks.